Time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Thank you, Uncle Barry. Outsiders this week. The following component parts. Van Badham, playwright, commentator, columnist. She's in Brisbane today. With me in Melbourne, Roger Franklin, editor of Quadrant Online and marketing guru and friend of the Dolphin, Toby Ralph.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
Hello there, Van. How's Brisbane? Still wet?
No, it isn't. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a lovely, lovely Brisbane day, beautiful and warm.
Very glad to hear that. Now, I think before we do anything else, it behooves us to just veer momentarily into matters postnatal. Unto us, Toby, a child is born.
A child is born indeed. I'm a marketer. And
I sense an opportunity.
I sense an opportunity indeed. The royal family I see as fundamentally a tourism gimmick and the best thing to happen to British tourism marketing since Stonehenge. I like the palaces, I like the horse-drawn vehicles and the diamond hats, but candidly, I am not that interested in their breeding habits. I seem to be something of an orphan, but I say, welcome to the world, little
whoever you are. This van reminds me of my perhaps favourite newspaper/magazine front page of all time, which was the one that Private Eye put together after the birth of Prince George, which just said in three bold words, woman has baby. Are you impressed, Van?
Oh, look, I'll be impressed when the royal baby turns out to be a robot lizard and not before. I find the hysteria around royal births quite bizarre. The only time I'll be celebrating is when we know for certain that it's the last royal baby that will ever bear a title and the unearned privilege of birth. And I'm happy to stand by that Republican sentiment, particularly today.
Interesting. Van mentions Roger Republican, and, you know, we bang on about our sort of sense of inner Aussie, and yet at a moment like this, all the front pages of all the papers, they throw the switch to Windsor.
Well, they do, but, you know, I mean, can you get any greater in a pantheon of non-entity people and a bunch of inbred German baby producers? Germanic baby producers?
I think we appear to be something of a mind here.
I rather like the Queen. Let me just
rare moment of unity left and right.
I too am rather fond of Marv, and good morning if you're listening on the internet.
And Van, just for a reference, while you're left and Roger's right, I represent the sloppy middle.
Well, that said, you know, while one has very little respect for breeding and genetics, I still wouldn't go for a republic because the current system works perfectly adequately and they provide amusement and entertainment. And imagine what was going on this weekend at Who Magazine and Women's Day. Imagine all the productivity that's gone on as a result of a single act of Congress 9 months ago.
Can we estimate the economic benefit of that single act of Congress, I wonder, on a global scale?
Oh, we'd have to hand that to the people that figure out the benefit of the Grand Prix here in Melbourne.
To be fair, at least the Kardashian girls work for a living. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, true. That's very good, Van. Now, one journalist already in the world has said that the royal birth will come as a needed antidote to the tragedy in Nepal. We won't go there, but I'm wondering, Van, here we are now almost a week on from the executions in Indonesia. Are we about to get back to business as usual on that? Do you sense the possibility of a resumption of normal service with us and our close neighbour?
Well, I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I think it's been a very interesting experience for us as a community and a nation, and I think that certainly the level of anxiety and grief and also common value around Australian opposition to the death penalty has been like a rare moment of national unity. And I, for one, want to hold on to that feeling that there are things that we stand for as Australian society that are inarguable, and that is, you know, that we do believe in mercy, that we do believe in rehabilitation, we believe in the power of the second chance, and we're also resolutely opposed to the death penalty. And I think that's an affirmation of who we are as a people. people that I don't think we've had for quite some time. And I think it is leading to a lot of soul-searching around also the way that we handle diplomacy and the way that we handle nuance in our discussions, particularly with Indonesia, because obviously the Indonesians are operating in a very different political context to ours, where they're a country with enormous borders, with very porous borders. It's a very, very young democracy. And, I mean, we have to remember that Australia had been federated for more than 60 years before we got rid of our own death penalty, and Indonesia's only really had a functioning democracy for the past 20. So very much they're still evolving, you know, the security and the stability of their state. And I think obviously we can't expect to wander into the world and just tell everybody else what to do.
No, I mean, Toby, do you share Van's sense there of us all being on the one page around the death penalty? And it was Barnaby Joyce very quickly after the fact said, well, a lot of people in this country support it.
Well, that's right. I think we're selectively opposed to the death penalty. If you look at the most recent studies into it, it splits about half and half. Half the people are pro-death penalty in Australia as opposed to 80% in Indonesia. We are opposed to the death penalty for a couple of good Aussie lads who are just smuggling a bit of smack out of Bali, but we were strongly supportive of it to the extent our Prime Minister stood up for it against the Bali bombers. There's a bit of hypocrisy going on there, I suspect.
Well, the Bali bombers that's an interesting moment, Roger, because I mean there was a lot of political heat around that. I mean, Rudd had to even slap down his Attorney General for suggesting that we might not be sympathetic to the execution of those gentlemen. So our approach isn't consistent.
No, it's not, but it should be, because we should oppose the death penalty. I think if you put it to the vote, a plebiscite in Australia, Ivan Milat would probably get a 95%, put him up against the wall and get rid of him straight away. But you can't afford to do that, because the moment you start ceding the power of life and death to the state, you don't know where it's going to stop and you don't know how it's selectively going to be applied. Now, as two unfortunates who were executed, tortured, and their families were tortured for 10 years before this took place, part of me is enormously sympathetic to them, but part of me also thinks about the days in my youth when I had to get a particular friend out of mine who broke Keith Richards' first rule and used to pass out in my toilet all the time with a needle in his arm. Now, what they did was shocking. You don't bring stuff like that into the country. And if you do, you only do it when the stuff is legalised. So you take away the markets and the profits, and these two aren't led into temptation, and neither are other people. That's just simply rational.
Yes. Mm. It's a very tough and complex business. I think we can agree on that. And I suspect we won't be just bundling it a business as usual. I suspect this will leave a lasting impression.
I think it may cut the number of people contemplating Bali holidays for a while.
Well, it's going to be very cheap in the short term, I suspect, so that may tempt some.
Yeah.
To be fair, when we talk about capital punishment, like, it's very easy for people to have a knee-jerk response, especially in the aftermath of a tragedy like the Bali bombing, because human beings are emotional creatures. But certainly, I mean, I think one of the things that it reveals is that there's a longer and more sophisticated conversation about what is just punishment and what is the role of the structure of justice and the structure of punishment in communicating what a society stands for. And I think it's shown that Australians are capable of having maturity to work through automatic knee-jerk responses and actually show nuance themselves around these issues of justice.
But isn't this also a knee-jerk response of another sort? I mean, when will we take that cause up with the Americans? When will we take that cause up with the Saudi Arabians? When will we take that cause up with the Chinese?
Well, I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find Australians who were in support of, you know, death penalties in Saudi Arabia or China. And I think certainly that in my community and what I've seen from media comment, that there's been an evolution in people's sentiments. I mean, if you look at the cover of the Daily Telegraph 10 years ago when those boys were sentenced, it was extremely punitive and extremely harsh. But 10 years of, you know, an evolving conversation, and that newspaper has switched its position and, you know, was campaigning for mercy as other people were. And I think that's really sophisticated. Like, that shows, you know, a social maturity that Australia is very capable of.
But those guys were humanised. They're brought into our lounge room every day for 3 months. We got to understand them. We got to know how the change they were. We saw Ben Quilty painting with one of them. compared to, what's his name, Van Nguyen in Singapore, who was knocked off without so much as a tear shed.
Yeah.
I'd debate that. I was in an airport lounge catching a flight when the Van Nguyen execution was about to take place, and every person in the Qantas lounge on that day was crying. That was an extremely emotional day. So I'd dispute that.
Okay, well,
the comparison, even so, this time round is vastly more widespread. I think that's safe to say.
But I think you could, regardless of the death penalty, you could at least give the Singapore authorities points for efficiency because they got it done relatively quickly. That absolute debacle and farce that the Indonesians supervised. And the way they played to the cameras, the families brought in through the press on the last day. Previously, they'd been slipped in through the back door. That was done purely for the domestic audience, that was shameful.
Not a good moment for the Indonesians, and not a good moment, I'd suggest, for the conduct of the media on that occasion either.
But how, if you were in a media pack, do you go back and tell your editor, I missed the shot because I was being courteous and some rude fellow jumped in front of me?
Well, you have to live with yourself. Maybe that's a thing to say.
Well, you also have to live with paying your mortgage, and that depends on keeping your job. You know as well as I do that the dynamics of a media scrum take over.
We are the outsiders here on Sunday Extra on Radio National. Van Badham and Roger Franklin and Toby Ralph all together. We have a budget in this country coming up in just a week and a bit's time. A really interesting column from Laurie Oakes, Roger, that suggests the possibility of a double disillusion quickly following that budget, and preceded only by some lawmaking to change the composition potentially of the Senate. What do you think of that as a possibility?
How do you change the composition of the Senate without putting the vote through the Senate?
That would be an awkwardness. Unless, however, and I think this is what you will find, that they will make changes to the way in which the Senate's elected, which will appeal to both the Liberal Party, the Labor Party and the Greens, and that will see it through the upper house. The double disillusion, is that a way out of our bind?
I suspect if Abbott calls a double dissolution, he'll be doubly disillusioned.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Toby Brown.
Yes, I think that Tony Abbott's political judgment, as proven by his prime ministership, may tend to indicate he would do something as politically foolish as call a double dissolution, and I, for one, hardly encourage him to do so.
Yes, well, Oakes makes the point. Abbott is a fighting man, and I say that on the eve of today's fight of the century, which I'm sure he'll be watching. There is the possibility of something of a poll bounce post budget, that maybe that will be taken advantage of. I guess, look, only time will tell with that. But it's one way out of the political bind, and certainly if we sort of take the last budget as an example, that bind can stretch. But none of you are impressed by the concept, I can tell.
I'd like to see it happen because I'd like to see some certainty. I think government at the moment is awfully dysfunctional, and I'd like to see one side have the power in both houses to do stuff, because we're drifting hopelessly at the moment, yeah. And it's a waste.
The only thing worse than a dysfunctional government is a functional government. It's much better to keep them tied up so that they can't do anything.
Your point is well made.
I don't understand why it's a bind. I think that the crossbenchers have been extremely refreshing. I mean, I for one was a huge supporter of the notion of minority government when Julia Gillard had to negotiate with Wilkie and Adam Band, and also the Windsor and Oakeshott. I thought that was a great outcome for Australia, which was certainly borne out in the enormous amount of legislation that Gillard managed to get through in that
time. My point exactly about government.
You know, like, inclusive positions had to be negotiated. And if we're a democracy...
We shouldn't be afraid of that as a possibility.
No, we shouldn't. And I think it's been fantastic having crossbenchers like Jackie Lambie and like Xenia Wang, who have been, and Lazarus, and have been asking questions and debating policy and talking about, well, what is best for the Australian people and what do Australian people really want? I don't agree politically with the positions those crossbenchers come from, but it's certainly been really great to have the conversation. And I think especially around the debates on deregulation of higher education, which has been stopped not once but twice, there's some affirmations of some consensus Australian values about the right to accessing higher education, which I think is fantastic. So I don't think it's a bind at all. I think that having that diversity and having those conversations actually involves more Australians in the political process and the political conversation, and that's what we want.
Now, here is something that I can't wait to watch on the TV in this next week.
bustling Sydney Harbour. Gateway to a sun-bronzed Aussie lifestyle.
Ooh.
Mount Druitt. It's also Sydney.
It's just been trashed.
Just not the one in the tourist brochures.
The satin bowerbird there making an appearance in Mount Druitt, Sydney. SBS series Struggle Street. And local councils out west are up in arms about this Fly on the Wall series. Toby, the mayor has complained to the communications minister, who is known to take an interest in the internal affairs of SBS. Has Malcolm Turnbull sort of dug a bit of a pit for himself there? Is he going to be put over a barrel trying to ban programming as well as sack journalists?
Well, I think it would be a kinder, gentler world if the mayor of Blacktown and Malcolm Turnbull vetted my television before I watched the program. So I think it's absolutely fine. I actually think on this show, which I'm eagerly looking forward to seeing, that there's probably just been some unfortunate editing of the trailer, and that as we see the more comprehensive documentary, we'll see the...
Yeah.
You know, intimate club-like ambience of Mount Druitt Westfield and the chatter and backslap of St Patrick's Pub.
It's all very county experience.
The Mount Druitt Triangle, the police station, the Centrelink office and the courthouse, they're all in the one square in the centre of Mount Druitt.
Well, I think it'll be watched, let's say that, on SBS coming up this week. Thank you so much to our outsiders for a cheery and entertaining confrontation, as ever. Van Badham, playwright, commentator, columnist, Roger Franklin, editor of Quadrant Online, and marketing guru, Toby Ralph.